Today's episode is brought to you by Theatrical Index. Theatrical Index has been the comprehensive resource for theater professionals for over 40 years. It's an accurate, factual, and up-to-date listing of all the shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, touring productions, and the premieres across the country. It's an insider's guide to the who, what, when, and where of the theater business. Subscribers can find out what's happening now or next year, as well as who is working to make it happen. And now the information does go deeper with new web features, including exclusive interactive grosses section, custom pro lists, and more. For more information on subscriptions or how to get a copy of Theatrical Index, go to theatricalindex.com or email their customer service at circulation@theatricalindex.com.
Hey, I think of you as someone I would like to be. Tell me, how do I find my part in this? I've already put all of my heart in this art, the art of not making it.
Hello, it's Tiffany. Nice to talk to you again. Welcome back. I really appreciate that you've been sticking through every episode. And if you're new to us, hey, this is Tiffany Springle, the host of The Art of Not Making It. Life is good. I've been really jumping into all my projects and creative goals I have. And I came back from Europe feeling so motivated and so dedicated and focused. So it's been great. I've been waking up every morning just already focused on what I need to do for the day and getting a lot done because of it. I think it also has just helped that I've been talking to all these really motivational, inspiring people. But it's also an interesting thing. So part of my being vulnerable and being open is, I'm just going to bring that to everything I say, everything I do, including my intro on the podcast. And I had to pause. I had just started therapy, which you'll hear in this episode. I think we talk about therapy and how I want to get into therapy. So I did start therapy right before Europe, and it was getting really helpful. This episode was recorded before that. And then I came back. We had to pause the therapy sessions, and I really need to get back into it. But it's funny. It's not funny, I guess. I think that's the opposite of that. I've had a really tough maybe year and a half, and I feel like I'm finally getting through it. I'm finally at this upturn where things are getting better or getting more settled. But because of therapy and me just kind of trying to deal with all the stuff in my personal life, I feel so emotionally raw, and I feel like the emotions I'm carrying are heavier. I just have a darker view on the world than I used to. I think by my nature, I'm an optimist. I'm a happy-go-lucky person. I want to see the good in everything, and I'm always thinking things will turn out okay, that things are playing out the way they're supposed to, and there will be, it'll all work out. But there has been this shift, I think, just because I've seen so much kind of just sad, unhappy, unfair things happen. I think it's kind of shifted the way, the lens I view the world with. I think there's a bit of a darkness that sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it isn't fair, and sometimes it's just nothing matters. And I'm not used to thinking like that. And I'm trying to, and I miss, sorry, I'm mumbling a little bit, but I'm trying to, just think through my thoughts. I miss being that happily naive, I think. And, I still do comedy. I love comedy. It's such a great outlet, but I don't think in my day-to-day socially, I've been as goofy and funny and as weird as I can be. Just in my social interactions, I think I've been a little bit more grounded and just thoughtful and inquisitive, but it hasn't been light, jokey, goofy, weird me. And I think that's okay, but I miss it. I miss that old part of myself that I think is still there. It's just, you know, I'm in a different place and I'm kind of going through some stuff, and I think that's okay. I'm trying to tell myself it's okay, but I was in an improv practice earlier this week, and I realized, like, if it had been before all this happened, I think I would have been much more quick with jokes and banter before practice and everything. And I'm just, right now, that's not, I guess, where I'm at. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay. And I know it will come back. It's such a dumb comparison, excuse me, but I'm gonna use Sex and the City in the first movie where she's depressed and she's sad about Big, and she's like, will I ever laugh again? And they were like, you'll laugh when something really funny happens. And I think I'm in that place. I know it's such a silly movie to reference, but I think that's where I'm at right now. It's just, I just need something really funny to make me laugh and help me to shift back. But anyways, so speaking of comedy, today's guest is Chris Evan Simpson. I know him from musical improv, actually. He's been doing musical improv for years and years and years. He's kind of like the leader of musical improv. He does that at Magnet Theater. He's on Musical Megawatt. He's been out for several years. He's very talented. He's currently on Nightshade every Tuesday night. His old team, Pyros, they were together forever. They love each other very much, and we're also very good together. I always loved watching them perform. They still, I think, perform on occasion, but you can catch them every Tuesday at Magnet Theater at Musical Megawatt. But we sat down and we talked. He's great. I love Chris. We actually drank beer together and just caught up. I am a very lightweight drinker. Very, very much so. My family, my Japanese side of the family, they all have like the Asian flush where their body doesn't break down alcohol, including me. And it can really put a damper on social activities with drinking. And my grandmother and my uncles and I think my brother, they all get physically ill if they drink a lot. I think my grandmother gets headaches and nauseous. My uncles get headaches. I think my brother also gets headaches. I don't get headaches. My body just freaks out. I get really red and I get hives and I get drunk very quickly if I'm not on top of things, and I can get hungover very easily as well. So, I think everyone else in my family doesn't drink because their body just doesn't take it. I think I'm the only one who really does, but it was great. I really enjoyed talking to him. I did find it was very loose and easy with him. We've known each other for a while. He gives the best hugs. I think we talk about it probably because it's one of his most strongest features as far as when I think of him, I think of his hugs. And what are some things he's done? At this point, when we interviewed, he was in Puffs at New World Stages off Broadway. He was a Cedric Oliver swing. And it was really cool to talk to him about that. That's such a good show. And I loved the show when I saw it. I didn't get to see him in it, but it's such a great, great, great show. I was not expecting to cry towards the end of it. Because like I said, I'm not a crier, but I definitely cried when I saw it when 5 minutes before I'd been laughing. And I think that tells you the quality of the show, if it can put you in that like emotional journey. But yeah, Chris is really great. A lot of the things he's gotten is through recommendations because he's just so likable and he does such quality work. Some other things he's done recently include Peter Who. He did that Nymph last year, the New York Musical Theater Festival. He was Flash Thompson. He's also done, let me see here, some readings. He was in Wicked Frozen for a while off-Broadway at St. Luke's Theater. He's, like I said, very active in improv and comedy. He's done some commercials, print work, film. He's really active with Story Pirates. He recently, actually, which we will talk about in the podcast, recorded something for Story Pirates with Lin-Manuel Miranda. And that was very cool to talk to him about that. Also very cool that Lin did that. So yeah, it was just a really great conversation. You'll actually see me close up because I'm trying to be vulnerable and open and raw. And I want my, you know, podcast guests to do the same. So if I expect that from them, I need to expect that from myself. And Chris was one of my earlier episodes, and I've been trying to really navigate through it, but he brought up the writer of the show and was singing his praises, as he should. He's amazingly talented. But I went on just one date with him, like years and years and years ago, before I was even in comedy. But I didn't say that to Chris. Chris had no idea. He's just talking about this writer and how talented he is. But I have all this like guilt over how I was not dating at the time. I had like dating issues. I was very guarded and would run away from relationships. Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's one of the things I want to tackle when I go and I get therapy. But Chris had no idea. I started to close up, and eventually you're just going to hear me word vomit. I dated him. And I just, you know, I think you see literally me implode because I just didn't know whether I should say something. I didn't want, you know, I hadn't even talked to Matt, the writer, about, I never formally apologized to him like I should. So this was good for me. I'm glad that you hear me really verbally vomit all over the place at that point. And it made me send Matt an apology, which means nothing to him. I mean, I'm sure it's like so insignificant in his life. He's so happy. He's in love. He's got this amazing thing he's created. He's creating so many more amazing things, you know. But I think it feels good to own up when you've messed up and you've done something wrong, or you didn't handle something the way you should have or appropriately. I don't know. Even if it's really late and expired, you should have done a long time ago. I don't know. I think it's still good to do. So it's probably good that he got brought up, because I was like, you know what? I gotta call out my BS too. So yeah, I'm trying to think. Chris, like I said, was wonderful. You're gonna love this episode. After you listen to it, please subscribe, please review, please rate the episode. I'll read it. I love getting feedback, and just the fact that you're here spending some time with me and listening in, listening to me babble, listen to me word vomit about this guy I went on only one date with. I really appreciate it. So oh my gosh, what am I saying? Okay, so I will talk to you all soon. Thanks for listening to me talk about my mental health and my dating problems, and enjoy. You're the first guest I have that I have alcohol.
Cheers.
I know, cheers. And which one are we drinking?
Coney Island IPA.
That's right.
Chicago. Yeah. No, not Coney. Goose Island IPA.
We've talked about this before, but do you get the flush?
Not always.
I get it every time, so we'll see.
I think I usually get the flush with red wine.
Okay.
I don't know why.
I've never figured out which alcohol affects me, but
I think that's the one. Maybe it has to do with like how much food I've eaten as well, and mm-hmm. how fast like the alcohol gets into my system to have the allergic reaction.
Right.
Because that's literally what it is. I've poisoned my body and then I turn red.
Yeah, it can't be healthy that I'm doing this.
Well, I mean, it's literally tasty poison. That's what we're
drinking. I always just think of like Japanese classic paintings where their faces are red. And I used to
that means that they're all
They all are drunk and have the
all fucked up.
Yeah, it's a curse. I mean, I had Eitan on here, so you can say whatever you want.
Eitan. Yeah. I saw him over the weekend, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, we played softball. We did funny ball.
I want to join
funny ball.
No.
Sean Taylor, like one of the owners of The Magnet, he's married to Robin Rothman, who's on my improv team.
I love Robin.
She's the best. But he's been organizing this like funny ball thing for 8 years now. It's just like softball with funny people, and he has friends at all the theaters, and he just like puts out a large invite.
I think I've heard of it in passing. It's similar to UCB. There's a couple like soccer teams that I've been wanting
this is
to join to.
So casual.
That's fun
like,
though.
Literally, we won't have enough players for a full team, so we'll put like 2 5-person teams in the field, and 1 5-person team will bat.
How often does it happen?
It's over. It
already Gosh
is.
Darn
it's
it!
It's usually like 6 or 7 weeks, but this season they were doing like construction in Central Park or something. We're doing like field maintenance, and we only had 2 games. And I went to both of them, and Eitan came to the one last week. It was a lot of fun.
I feel so conflicted. You know what? I think I've seen invites. I'm bad about... You're probably much better about this. This goes into what we were talking about before I started recording, is that I don't follow Facebook invites. I mean, I will see that I was invited to something 2 weeks after it happened.
Yeah.
Or when my friend texted
me
about it.
The reason why like I knew about it or like made a point to go to it is because like I missed it for the last 2 years because of work.
Though.
And I wanted to go, and I had Saturdays off this summer.
Oh, that sounds
because
like so
of
much
Puffs.
Fun. Oh, yeah. Are we going to go right into that?
I don't know. No.
You know what?
Like, I changed my schedule once I got cast as a swing, and I had Saturdays off, and I was on call, but, like, non-union on call, so
yeah.
I'm never there unless they ask me to be there.
And Puffs officially ends...
Sunday.
Yeah, I thought so.
Sunday.
I have a few people I'm interviewing, and I'm trying to get the episodes released in time, and I'm realizing all of them end in the next week. So it's pretty much impossible
the
to
like prom
release.
Ended on,
I know,
this past
I know.
Sunday, and like so many Broadway shows are closing. It's just a bad year.
I know.
No one wants to come to America. I wonder why.
The prom is so good.
It's so good. You saw it.
Yeah. I don't know Josh at all.
Josh Lehman is amazing.
Yeah.
He plays like the PR guy.
Yeah. I saw him as a...
Oh, Barry.
I saw him as Barry.
How was his Barry?
And
really,
he was amazing.
I was so upset that I wasn't able to see him as Barry.
Yeah, it was so good. We know of each other because of the scene.
Yeah,
and we
he took, like, classes last year.
We know
year.
Of each other. We've messaged each other about, like, performing together.
Last year, it was...
And I've heard of him because he was on an indie team that Explode used to have on pretty often. But somehow I don't think we formally talked to each other.
He's like the nicest, most like genuine, giving human being in the world. Like he actually, like he got me in an interview or like a meeting with his commercial agent.
Oh, that's so nice.
Nothing happened from it, but like I wasn't like doing.
But you know what? That just makes me.
It's just all olive branch, not olive branches, but he's like so. He celebrates everyone around him.
I feel like because like I said, we don't know each other very well, but everything he writes on Facebook is always so positive. And he had like a really sweet backstage or playbill article about the importance of being kind and paying it forward to other actors. And that's something, unfortunately, I don't think is always celebrated or seen as necessary. But yeah, I sent him a message after I saw him perform as Barry, and it was amazing. He's so good, and just the show is so important. The audience around me, I like cried. I bawled. And I sent him a long message about how important the show is. Yeah, it's just an important show, regardless of how you feel.
Yeah.
I don't know where your background is or whatever. It's completely relatable because they have the Broadway characters who are New York and city and that urban bubble.
Yeah.
And then you have a humanized version of people in like smaller towns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gushed, and I was like, you don't know me, but keep talking.
He brought me into, I think it was right before they opened, they had like a press day or something like that. It's like the day where all the reviewers came, which is when they bring all their friends and family, and I've been messaging him for a while, and he's like, yeah, I got you two
Aww.
Tickets to see it on the Saturday.
Oh, he seems so great, yeah.
Come by. So actually, you know Curry, right? Curry Whitmore?
I love Curry, yeah.
Yeah, Curry brought Rocky with him, and then I brought my friend with me. And
okay.
Really
I think I saw, that was when I still knew of him, but we hadn't, Because he kind of, the way we started to talk to each other was through Sequel, actually.
Oh. Okay.
Because Rachel posted Sequel, since this all, we are recording, I might as well say what Sequel is. They perform at Magnet Theater once a month, and they do the sequel of a musical, a Broadway musical based on what the audience suggests. So Rachel always has a different advertisement leading up to it of a Broadway show, and she used the prom for it. And then Josh like reached out about the possibility of bringing the cast to see the show, which was really nice of him. And then we just kept talking, and I was like, you do musical improv, you should just pop in. You should be on the stage.
Reprise your character in the sequel of the show.
Pretty much, or like do your own version of a sequel. Yeah. So we were talking about it, and it still should happen. I think it would be a good thing. Yeah.
If he's a busy guy. I know. He does a ton of stuff. He already worked on a new project. Yeah. He has his own podcast.
I was going to say, I want to spread the word about his podcast, too.
Do you know what it's called?
Josh Swallows. So,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I've been listening to it. It's very good. I listened to the Matthew Morrison.
Matthew Morrison, yeah.
I want to say Matthew McConaughey over and over again.
Maybe he's the Matthew McConaughey.
And I knew it was wrong.
Musical theater performer.
No, I've respected Matthew Morrison for years. That was so embarrassing. This is the alcohol. But yeah,
right, yeah,
he has,
not,
I think he has like three episodes
true
now.
It's not true that you want to say that you've been censoring because no.
I am really bad at with names, okay. And I get very nervous when I'm put under pressure with it. So, it's Matthew Morrison. You're right.
The last, I think the one that I saw, this is going to be a podcast talking about Josh. The ad I saw recently, where he interviewed Christian Borle.
Oh, yeah, I want to watch that. A Girl I Know, Samira.
Who is gonna be in Little Shop.
Oh, yeah. We just were talking about that before I pressed record. Downtown. But Samira, another mutual friend of mine, I saw on Facebook posted, she plays Moana, I guess, in the episode. Like, there's like a spoof or a prank on him in the episode of Moana. Like, she plays a Moana.
A Moana.
Like impersonator. Yeah. But she posted on Facebook like months ago that she was with Christian Borle, and then turns out Josh had asked her. Yeah. So theater is small.
Yeah.
I was really excited about it.
Back to the whole thing about like being nice and in just in general, and like how it's like overlooked and not really like celebrated. It's just like, but like that's how like the best things get made is like nice people wanting to work with each other to make something special.
Yeah.
Like, do you watch Good Place?
I do, and I love it.
I'm obsessed with Good Place. I listen to Good Place podcast. The Good Place podcast. You hear everything about...
There's a podcast?
Is there a podcast?
We're just going to keep advertising shows.
That's all this is about. It's called The Good Place, the podcast, hosted by Mark Evan Jackson, who plays Sean.
Uh-huh.
And he gets, like, a person in the... any department that's not an actor, and then an actor, and maybe one other person, and then they just chat.
Oh, I didn't know about
it's
this.
So
I've been meaning to
good.
Listen to it.
And like one of the big things that like Michael Schur has created, like in the world of all the TV that he's made, is just like he brings on people he likes to work with that are nice and just are ready, willing, and able to have fun. And like that's why you see in all the Mike Shore shows, from even back to The Office when he was just like maybe just a producer or a writer. He wasn't the showrunner, but he was like high up, to Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Recreation, and now The Good Place. It's just like there's a reason why you keep seeing so many of the same people in these shows, is because they like them and they're nice and they have fun.
Yeah. No, I think it's really true. I don't know if I felt like I realized that there were people who would lift each other up for a long time. That's always been the way I view things. I'm not someone who, like, I played sports growing up, but I was never someone who wanted to win to beat the other team. It was more about just like having fun. My coaches hated me because of it. But I really think there's room for everyone, and you don't, depending on the atmosphere you decide to surround yourself with, it's not always shown that that's supported.
Yeah.
But I love that it's true. Like, I meet so many people who are working and the most talented, and they're always the nicest ones.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they're somewhere in the mid-tier where, like, the bitter, nasty people kind of subside because they can't...
been at it for too long.
Yeah.
They're a little more jaded about it.
And it's not even me, like... shit-talking people who... because usually there's a reason they feel they have to be that way. You know, like, some of my least favorite experiences have been musical theater auditions. Like, I feel like the energy in the room can be the most catty sometimes with the actors, but I can understand why people feel the way they do. It's a product from the atmosphere that they're surrounding with, where they don't feel like they have control.
Every person next to them is their competition.
Yeah, and everyone's beautiful and like extremely talented.
Sure,
and there's
how you set yourself.
Yeah, and there's 600 people in a small room auditioning for like two roles.
Yeah,
and
the three casting directors are like had a long day already, and then they have another 4 hours ahead of them. And
yeah,
they're kind of not even present either.
Right. So it's understandable. It's never bad talking it, but I love when I meet someone like Josh or even you. Like I remember when we first met. I'm gonna talk. Yeah. I'm already tipsy. but in regards to when I first met you, one of the first things impressions I got from you was that you were kind to me. You were warm, and I remember your hug. I think of your hug every time I try to hug somebody.
Hugs are really important. People
they are.
Don't realize how important hugs are. I think some people
you
may
have
turned off by my hug because like I'm kind of intense.
You are a hugging professional.
Have I told you like my rule when it comes to hugging?
Why don't you break it down? Because
no, literally, it's hold it for like 3 seconds longer than you think is comfortable.
It's not just that though. You like really hug them. You don't just lightly.
No. I'm not just like wrapping a blanket around
you.
I'm like it's like a casual vice.
I know. It feels so good.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy you enjoy it. I haven't heard many bad reviews.
Yeah.
But, like I know that I have an atypical hug.
Can I ask you a question? So about like we were talking about nice people and lifting each other up. I feel like the improv comedy community, by its nature, is a very like team oriented group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's the most team oriented.
Yeah. I mean, like tying in with like nice people, like with improv, like you can't have a successful group if you're not on board with everybody.
Yeah.
Like teams fall apart when any number of individuals like make it more about themselves and not about the collective. Because like, you're improvising an ensemble piece. You're not like setting yourself up to be the star. Like you can be selfish in improv in some ways, but like you need to be celebrating each other.
Right.
Like, the best improv is when like your goal is to make your teammate look like a rock star. You know. And musical improv is already like so difficult on paper. You're not just improvising scenes that are thematically tied to, like you're doing a narrative, which is like we're already trained to like not do a narrative when we're doing improv, but then you have to do a narrative when you do improv and musical
improv. And then for people who don't do improv, because I'm meeting with all sorts of different people, improv like narrative is more like a real story based way of focusing on the improvisation. So you're creating a full story arc as opposed to maybe if you're watching long form, as you call it, non-singing.
Actually, it's musical improv versus spoken word improv.
Spoken word, yeah.
Because if we're going to qualify the musical improv, then we have to qualify the other.
Right. I want to be respectful
Thank
of your
you.
Terminology. You're welcome.
I'm very precious about that.
I know. We've had many
because
bar talks
about
this.
Because if you don't describe it that way, then it's like, that's normal improv. I hate when people say normal improv. because I hate the word normal in general.
That's
implying that like what I have been doing for the last 10 years is like out of the norm. Like, yes, we're in like a niche of the improv community. Like, improv is already a niche in the comedy community, but it's just like, no, we're all ultimately trying to do different things. It's like cricket versus baseball, you know, like similar.
How do you feel about people using regular improv as a term?
I don't like it.
Yeah. Is it less offensive than normal?
Equally.
Okay.
To me, I do normal improv. It just has to be musical.
Right.
And then a lot of those other people, like, they do normal improv, but like, they don't sing. But they could sing, but then they don't have a band.
Yeah, that's true. Musical improv is so much fun.
I love it so much.
It's so much fun.
That, like, saved my, like, without improv, I don't know if I'd still be, like, doing, like, performing, right? Like, I don't know. If I didn't have that regular...
Why do you feel that way?
It's just, like, the regular, like, consistent, like, weekly creative outlet. If I wasn't, and I was trying to do spoken word improv for a while, and I never got cast on a team, which is totally fine. Like I don't feel like I shine like some of my favorite improvisers out there. Like I know I can do it, and I'm good, but I know that like I feel like in spoken word improv I do I'm like a lot of people, so it's like there's more people for that type of player. Mm-hmm. If that's how they're even thinking about casting, I don't know. But it's fine. Like, I feel
are
like,
you using like the pirate, the ninja? What are those terms? Are you
pirate,
saying?
Pirate, ninja, and robot?
Robot, yeah. So
what's exactly the definition of each one? Like a ninja is like a sniper. A ninja like comes in, like drops that bomb and then disappears. Like, or like a robot is a little more analytical. I don't know. I forget. Like,
I think that's right. I'm too tipsy to answer this question.
Should I look it up?
We could inform the masses. I usually know this because I've had many friends who have long conversations about who everyone is, which I actually don't like. I think you should learn what your strengths are and where your brain tends to want to go in a scene.
Pirate, robot, ninja, Billy Merritt. That's right. Billy Merritt came up with it. Three types of improvisers.
God, I've been doing improv for too long to forget this. But
yeah, no, it's just like,
I don't like using it.
I don't think anyone is purely one. Everyone has elements of...
Yeah, but I've had friends who love comedy, and they specifically make a point to break people down, and that's kind of your box, and I think because I'm so adverse to boxes in general, I've listened, and I'm like, yeah, I see what you're talking about, but then I think maybe it's the pirate. One of them is
pirate,
like moving the scene along.
Pirate is fuck your fear kind of attitude.
Oh yeah, they're the ones who come in and they just mix it up.
Yeah, willing
they
to
just
jump
throw
into
things.
Not necessarily having a solid idea in mind or knowing what
that's
next.
Right. And then the robot is the one who's kind of just moving
they're
the scene
all about
along.
The logic and rules of the scene of the world
right.
created. And then the ninja is all about true balance. Oh, they're versatile. Take the role of pirate or robot.
Right, that's
the
difference.
Their main goal is serving the needs of the scene, whether it's with a fearless, high-energy initiation or justifying one. I think I might have more ninja tendencies with a strong robot.
I could agree with
element.
That. I could agree with that.
Because, like, at least with Pyros, my team that I was on for 4 years at the Magnet, I felt like, well, A, we also, like, fell into, like, our habits. Like, we knew how to play with each other, and we... So, like, whoever I was with, like, we can do... I knew how to play that scene with the person because we knew each other so, so well.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like I often came in with, like, strong justification type things. Or I was like, all right, I'm gonna fuck with everyone. I'm just like, just do a thing and make it big, whatever.
I was
but
gonna
then,
say,
like,
it depends on who I'm playing with for me. Because... Which is probably why I would never say I'm, like, solely a pirate, because I really will, like, if there's someone who's going to go crazy quick, I'm going to try to, like, find the logic in the scene and move the scene forward. But if I know I can play with these people and I trust them, then I'm okay throwing shit to
but
the
ultimately,
air, you know?
With all of, like, that, like, intellectualizing of improv, like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm just going to have fun. Like, it's just fun. I'm going to play. Yes, there are certain times where, like, I want to make, like, strong narrative or, like, structural moves to, like, move everything along. Sometimes I just want to just fuck around.
Right. Another team that's not Magna related, Rumble Teaser, one thing I love about them is because they're UCB oriented.
So
they're so game focused in their scene work that, and game is finding the unusual thing in the scene. So they will just hit the game so hard, not caring about the narrative structure. At least this is how it comes across to me and how
Eric.
They do
more of a montage, don't they?
I can't remember which form they do. I
but
honestly
Eric
don't know.
Director, right?
Yes, and I've
amazing.
Worked with Eric. He's amazing.
Yeah,
and
I'm
but
sorry,
he likes. Oh, are you?
Yeah.
But I know just from him coaching me in the past is that he does like you trusting your instincts. You'll find a way to wrap it all up. But you're gonna play the game or whatever is unusual that's thrown at you. You're not gonna just ignore it.
That's something the hardest
for the narrative.
With like the way the Magna has trained, they train very like narrative driven.
Yeah.
Which is like very counter to like all of our like improv.
How do you feel about you've done a musical set and yes, there's a really sweet, thoughtful story and clear arc, but maybe it wasn't as fun or goofy or like
I don't need it to be the funniest thing. Like I often,
you're okay with grounded.
I don't go for the joke ever.
Right.
Like in my last show that I played, like I literally was a pizza rat that Matrix style destroyed two people in the first scene. So that was like absurd and funny, but like, and like very different than what I normally do. I think I don't know.
Yeah.
We are all the worst, like, in describing ourselves as improvisers, because, like, we have our own, like, internal feeling of what we're doing, but like the perception is very much not like completely what I think I did. But like usually, like I'm just like, I try to just like focus on like the emotion and relationship of the scene.
Yeah.
Not that I'm always successful at it.
Well, honestly, if you were to, I don't like improv where they're just being hammy for the sake of it. I think it's much more, you're going to find something much richer if you just sit in the reality of it.
Comedies and human nature and how like honest reactions to real things. Like you, unless you're scripting it, like you can't like really force the comedy. You just have to have a real reaction.
You know, one of my favorite things though is doing, because I've been doing hour-long sets as well as, of course, the standard. I love a longer set than a shorter set, like a full hour. I love it so much more. Because you don't feel rushed. You don't feel like you have to just cram it in.
You can play with so many more things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know.
I love it. I love it so much. I'm gonna keep doing it forever and ever.
I know.
It's weird. Like I feel like the improv world is like so... It's like, I don't know. Like, I came into the improv community 10 years ago. 10 years ago? 12 years ago? What year is it? 2019? I moved to New York City in 2007. Didn't know how to be an actor, but I thought I wanted to be an actor. And a friend told me to take an improv class, so I started doing improv at UCB. And I was like, that's right, we're talking about this because the improv saved me from the
Right, that's what we were trying to get to.
And like, I don't know, what am I trying to say? Other than like...
But you found UCB classes, and
yeah, I found
you
UCB were classes. Here trying to be I did a year there. I wasn't past level 5, but I still loved doing it. I didn't have any other like creative like acting things going on. I didn't know how to be an actor, and like the idea of going to like a cattle call audition just completely annoyed the shit out of me. I was like, I'm never gonna do that.
Did you try it and you realized?
I never did that.
Okay.
I never auditioned for things like that.
Did you just have a confidence you can find your own path pretty early in?
Or
you
just knew you... like, I don't want to do that.
So you just knew you had a standard of how you want to go about this.
Yeah, and like, I didn't even know the right way to go about the business.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no right way to go about the business, but like, I was like, all right, well, I'll get my foot in the door by just doing improv, because that seems to be the cool thing that everyone's doing. And I just fell in love with it immediately. Like, it resonated with me. I've always been awful with memorizing lines.
Do you have tricks to learn lines? Sketch comedy?
I did a little. I don't do it now.
Okay.
I would do it, but like, I'm not a writer, or like, which is such a fucking lie, because I do improv, and what is sketch but loosely edited improv.
Well, I feel like, side note, I feel like a lot of people start out in improv and then go into sketch, go into writing, and that's why there's so much
money in improv. Like, you can't actually make a career.
Well, not even just that. I think people learn to become multifaceted because they're willing to fail and try and create, and then you meet other people who are willing to do that too, and it motivates that, as opposed to, I think, like, people who are just actors or just in their field, they can feel stuck because they're not meeting people who are motivating them or making them feel comfortable to try it.
I've taken sketch classes, and like I was a tech for this sketch group called Citizen Models. Mm-hmm. They were not affiliated with a magnet, but one of the OG cast members was a magnet person, and then they started doing shows, and I was their tech for years.
Oh, okay.
And then after like 2 years of being their tech, and they needed another person, and they asked me to be in the group, and like, I think at that time I took like a sketch class and tried my hand at it, but whether it's like I just didn't give myself enough time to do it, or I just like didn't believe in myself as a writer, or just like I'm not a writer, didn't work out. And then it didn't work out like as a performer with them, for nobody's fault other than they tried something and they're like, we kind of really like what we were doing before, and like that's just like not the direction that the group was going to go in.
Right.
The
reason I asked was sketch tends to be very quick. You have to learn your lines because there's always rewrites happening up to the performance.
It's just repetition.
I have tricks where I like to, if it's really crammed for time, I will record the other people's lines.
Yeah.
No inflection, just to get in my ear the cues and the beats of what is being said. And then when I reiterate my lines back to myself, I don't put inflection in because I want to just,
and you don't want to memorize inflection. You want to just memorize,
because one thing I think
in the room, honest reaction to whatever.
Right. Which is, side note, I think improvisers are some of my favorite actors
because they can only honestly react.
Yeah, like they're pretty much doing Meisner exercises over and over again.
Don't honestly react or mm-hmm. stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and honestly, like I still do acting as you do as well, which we're about to talk about.
Oh, that's right. This is about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just in general, it's just about like who you are. But I tend to find some of my favorite actors are the people who have a comedy background because they genuinely just know how to just be present and let it.
Well, you look at
live,
people like,
you know?
Like Steve Carell and like Jim Carrey and like all these other like big comedy actors that like did the turn.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like they. Comedy is so much harder than drama, except for crying. I can't cry in queue. I can't do that.
I've had to cry a few times in shows, but I have to genuinely get there.
The
I can't.
The only time I've ever cried was in an improv set.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But
I think I did it once.
I love that. I don't do enough like real serious scenes in improv.
Yeah.
They usually go off somewhere.
Yeah.
But I did a play Dracula like a year and a half ago, and it was really therapeutic because like I had to cry a lot on the show.
Yeah.
But I would cry because the scene would naturally take me there.
Right.
If I was like, okay, time to cry, I would not. I'm not good at crying on cue. I've never been good at that. I think I'm better at handling and navigating through it, but I still don't have all the tricks of the trade with that. I find laughing on cue hard.
Oh.
I mentioned that to my friend Michael. Laughing in like a play or something, if the line isn't funny or isn't justified, is so hard for me. Like if it's necessary to laugh.
Huh. I don't do enough I don't do enough theater to really know how
I don't know.
Laugh.
It's so hard for me. Maybe I just overthink it.
Yeah.
But for me, when I laugh, it's an organic. Raw, you know.
I think in Wicked Frozen I had to do a laugh with a group at a thing.
Maybe I'm just overcomplicating it for you. You probably
do
it all the time.
I'm like the
wouldn't.
Least heady actor. I'm just like, well, I'm like.
I think that's how you should be.
How close is this person to me? All right, I'm gonna have to put a British accent on, but like this is like camp counselor me.
I get really okay. Side note: I get really self-conscious about having to play characters with accents.
Oh God, I'm awful.
I always
accents.
Have to though. Do you play characters with accents? I
in
always
Puss,
get
in
cast.
Puss, one of the characters I swing is Cedric, and
right.
he's British.
Yeah. Does that make you see? I get so nervous.
I got so nervous, but like I feel like. I don't know what it was, which, other than just like I have to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna figure it out. And I did it in the audition, so it wasn't.
I'm sure.
They
I'm
cast
sure it
me
was great.
What I did.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the audition. So how did you audition?
Yeah. So Puffs was like. So my whole like career has been just like time with like being friends with people and then pursuing projects that I want to be a part of. I hate auditions in general, and I'm too old to go out for something that I have zero interest in being in just to be in something to have a credit or whatever.
With this being said, though, it's not that you're just sitting around expecting things to come to you.
No,
you're
no,
busy
no, no.
performing.
I'm doing stuff.
And these
I'm
people are
people.
Seeing you in other projects and then thinking of you for the other
Or
things.
Like people I've done stuff with are like then making things and they're like, oh, I want to do that thing that you told me about, so I'm going to hit you up a lot.
Well, that's another side note about comedy that I think a lot of people don't realize is I feel like the success rate of my friends in comedy, like I know I have friends that will probably be on SNL mm-hmm. or, you know, on Big Stars someday just
so
because...
So many of my friends have been in, like, callbacks in SNL.
Right. I have friends from this week who were seen by SNL recruiters. But it's an interesting thing where... I think part of that is because people want to lift each other up, and then you're always working, you're always hustling, and everyone sees what you're doing by the work you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, I can go back even further, but, like, I'll go first to Puffs and how I got into that.
Oh, yeah,
and, like,
yeah, yeah.
My whole, like, New York City experience. But, like, so I know Matt Cox, who wrote
mm-hmm.
Puffs.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we were the same year. We were cast in Story Pirates in the same year. And 4 years ago, I remember him coming into the Story of Pirates Great Room, and he was just talking about this new thing he was writing, like, after finishing Kapowie Go Go, which was another show that, like, I missed but desperately wanted to be a part of. and he just was telling me about this Potter show he had an idea for. I was like, I want to play in this world and audition or whatever. And like, I don't think they were auditioning or anything like that. And I knew that it was just like happening. And I saw it twice and like fell in love with the show. And I've always wanted to be a part of it. And I always let him know, like, like, hey, like, I'll drop you an email. Let me know if you guys are ever auditioning. Like, I would love to join the cast if you ever need to. And then I remember either he, like, messaged me or I saw a thing and then I hit him up. It was, like, about auditions for Puffs a year ago in August 2018. And I had my audition scheduled. Like, it was happening. I had my time. And I had to bail out of it in the last second, because I got a call back for Blue Man Group, which was an audition I didn't even try to find. It was just like a random message on Backstage.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did they reach out to you?
Yeah. They just did like a blanket. Like, they had people of a certain height that have a certain set of strong features on their face and then had a general music background. I think that's literally all they searched
one,
for.
One short aside, who emailed you? Because I know people...
It was the casting director. It was via Backstage.
Oh, okay.
So I got a Backstage message asking me if I wanted to audition for them.
Aww.
I was like,
yeah.
All right.
I could see you being in that.
And then I got a call back after like my initial audition. So I stayed for the full day, and that night was supposed to be my Puffs audition.
Oh, okay.
I didn't end up booking Blue Man Group, but like, I was like, fuck, I missed like this opportunity.
You had a re-audition though.
But then, cut to February of this past year, I just get an email out of the blue, and they're like, we are auditioning for Swings. Are you available?
Mm-hmm.
And I was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had an audition on, I got the email on a Thursday. They sent me the signs that night. When I confirmed, I auditioned on Wednesday, had my call back 2 hours later because they were really fast tracking it, and then I had my first rehearsal the following Monday.
That's so cool. I remember when you got it, it felt very...
It was like...
Quick, yeah.
It was so quick, but it was also like... This was, like, the show that I needed to be a part of.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was, like,
you're perfect for it.
Incredibly satisfying.
I
it's,
know.
Like, that's, like, the world I want to play in, you know? Just, like, slightly heightened, weird, cartoony reality with
it's so
huge
good.
Heart. Have you seen Puffs?
I have. I cried. I have a few friends in it.
Oh,
you're the only
no.
one I... oh, God. I'll give you a list of people, because there's a lot of people, and I actually have friends I forget are in it.
Uh-huh.
One of my best friends, Devin, who's actually going to record, he used to do wardrobe for, like, a year.
Oh, dope.
Yeah. I think he was out there. Wasn't there a party, like, yesterday? Or
yesterday.
He was at the party.
So, yesterday at the Pit, because Matt is just a prolific writer and funny human being, has written many sequels to Puffs inspired by other
properties.
Oh, has properties.
He really? I didn't know
so,
that.
At when Cursed Child came out, he wrote a play inspired by that.
That's
and
so
then
cool.
When Fantastic Beasts came out,
yeah.
He wrote another one inspired by that. And then the sequel came out, and he wrote another one, I think.
Oh,
and
wow.
Last night was like the fifth sequel that was like tying everything together about some random character from Puffs. Actually, it was about Zach Smith. And justifying why Zach Smith says something different every night.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was, they got all of the original cast members to come back and do the reading, and then some current cast members were in it as well, and then all of us Swings and current cast members who weren't performing were just like sitting on the side of the Striker stage at the Pit.
I
it was so
that.
Fun. It was so great.
Yeah.
It was so
yeah,
so.
Yeah, he
so
got
great.
Like swag. There were like shirts or something.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He had on Instagram.
One of the cast members like organized making unofficial Puffs hoodies.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a hoodie.
With a bunch of inside jokes that I don't know. Because
yeah.
I've only been in the cast since February.
Did you find it was hard to be a replacement though? Like getting into the swing of things pretty quickly.
What was hard was it being a non-union show, so I didn't have weekly rehearsals and put-ins. I only had four rehearsals and a put-in for each of the tracks I learned, and other than that, it's like all on my own.
You know what I find crazy, though, is that's how Broadway works, too.
Yeah.
Which I just find insane, yeah.
I thought they had more regular rehearsals.
It depends. So, and I may get my facts wrong, but, like, one of my good friends, Michael, like I said, he was the Hamilton standby and the Aaron Burr understudy.
Uh-huh.
And I think his Broadway debut, if I remember correctly, is some crazy story. I shouldn't have drank beer. I'm, like, just such a mess. But I feel like it was a very last-minute thing, and he had his put in the day of his debut. It was something like that, something crazy.
Well, it also depends on, like, I know with, like, Groundhog Day, another Josh Lehman Broadway show.
I know. He, you know what?
I have a lot of... over him. He and I go to the same gym, and, like, I remember seeing him.
Oh, you go to...
MFF.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My Unicorn Ninja Fantasyland. Yeah, so, like, I remember I bought tickets to see one of the last previews, and I fell in love with the show immediately, and then I just, like, did the lottery every single, like, day or weekend.
Which show are you talking about?
Groundhog Day.
Okay, okay.
And,
I did not know he was in that till recently.
Yeah. Andy Carl, like, busted his knee in, like, the first week, or the last week of previews, and had to have, like, some sort of knee cast on. And he made it to opening night, but then him and Andrew Call kind of, like, alternated. And Andrew Call's first performance was, like, without any put in or anything like that.
Oh, really?
Because in previews, like, you're not training the swings in the same way. He's just doing his part, and then, like, they know that they're going to do it, but, like, it's just, like... We'll get to it. Let's get through previews and set the show, and then we'll make it happen. And he was so on top of his shit that he was like practically perfect on his first show.
Yeah,
did it. But it's so hard. Like, I respect the people who are perfect.
That's got to be terrifying, though. Yeah. In the moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was
because if you're in your head too much, you can't do the. You're gonna forget all your lines.
I was so nervous the first time I went on, and I knew that I was going on. On, like, a specific Saturday in July, I think it was. And I found out. And I was like, I had all plans. I was like, all right, I'm going to, like, get to Crunchtown, like, on all of my stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see it a lot and make it happen. And then I got a text asking me to go on that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, this is what I'm paid to do. I have to do it.
I mean, but aren't you proud of yourself that you...
Yeah, it was my first time. It was the first time I've ever done something like that before.
Yeah.
I've never been a swing before Puffs.
Do you enjoy being a swing? Do you find it a little bit nerve-wracking?
I find it very nerve-wracking, but I would much rather be a principal and just, like, be on every night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, doing a swing is fun, and I know, like, I've talked to, like, Jake Keefe, who's, like, been the permanent universal swing on Puffs for the last, like, 2 years or so, and, like, he's an improviser through and through, and he's like, I could never do this show as the same character 8 times a week. Like, I live in having the opportunity to play 6 different characters in a given week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That keeps his brain, like, satisfied, and, like, I totally understand that, but, like, I don't do theater a lot, but, like, when I do theater, it's just, like, I just want to do it. I want that just to be my thing.
Yeah.
Especially with a show like Puffs. It's, like, so much fun to be in.
It's so fast-paced, too.
It's insane. It's
crazy, yeah.
It's insane. You should see the backstage. It's, like...
Oh, it looks chaotic.
It is chaotic, but it's very organized, and everybody...
Well, it has to be, doesn't it?
Knows exactly where they need to be. And even the two stagehands, like, who are handing off props or helping doing quick changes, like, on both of my, like, swing-ins, like, just, like, grabbed my shoulders and moved me around. Because I was just, like, 2 feet away from where I was supposed to be.
I guess that's more what I mean is it's organized chaos. You have to know where you're going.
Yeah.
But the way the show is written, like, if I remember correctly, there's constantly, like, ins and outs through the doors, quick costume changes.
I'm sure there's 300 scenes in this, like, 110-minute
Is there three, like, doors?
Four.
I remember there's multiple doors, and then people are going in and out.
And then there's, like, the... like, upstage, like, center is, like, a small platform that has two more entrances.
Gotcha. Entrances. One of my best friends, Devin, he worked the show for a long time, and it's got to be stressful for the wardrobe people as well. Like, I just...
Yeah, but it's such a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
It's such a well-oiled machine.
It's a good show.
It's
so good. I cried, and I wasn't expecting to.
They have, like, such a huge following, too. Like, international. They have their second Australian tour happening.
Well, this is something props to... I don't know if this is Matt's doing, but just the fact that you had it in cinemas nationwide.
Yeah, the Fandango event.
Yeah, then it's also you can purchase the live stream or the streaming of it.
Yeah.
Then you can also, wasn't it Australia?
They're doing their second Australian tour right now.
That's, I think that's which is, like, which so is, smart, which is, like, you know?
a Tilted Windmills production. Like, Tilted Windmills is the production company, like, the big producing company that is producing Puffs. And, like, the two Australian tours are 100%, like, this production just in Australia. There's a lot of licensed productions around the world, even at, like, regional theaters and stuff like that. But, like, Puffs New York and the two Puffs Australia tours are the same show.
Right. They should bring it to
same
London.
Same blocking, same all this stuff.
It would do crazy well in London,
Who knows? Who knows what their plans are
I know. Yeah. But I think it's amazing, though, because he comes from a writing sketch background, but it's just so smart.
Matt
does. Yeah. And I believe he also...
From what he told me, he kind of stumbled into writing. Kapowie Go-Go.
Because he also works at The Flea, right?
He's a member. Yeah, so he's a member of The Flea, and that's where Kapowie Go-Go came out, which was, like, their, like, video game, anime, manga-inspired, six-hour adventure. That's where that came from. And I think he was saying to me that he did that just because, like, he wanted to do what he wanted to do and no one was writing what he wanted to do. So he's like, well, I'm just going to write.
Yeah, but I love that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I find that inspiring, too.
You should interview him, too.
I know, he's such an amazing person. I do... You know what? I'm going to be an open book. I wasn't going to say this, but I'm going to put this out there. I owe Matt an apology because I know him. I think I told you this at the bar when you first told me you got the show. Me and Matt went on a couple dates. The world is really small. Like a long time ago, maybe 5 years ago or so, we dated. And I mentioned this actually with previous episodes because with Eitan specifically, we talked about like love life and dating. Because I was like, I'm not super sexually open in that way. But when I was dating Matt, I was not comfortable with the concept of dating, of being vulnerable, being in relationships. And I feel really bad because at that point I would push people away when I liked them. And I liked Matt. I had nothing against him. But I, like, pushed him away. So I feel there's this, like, I know he's so happy he has a relationship now. Yeah. And but I feel very bad for the way I handled it because I wasn't communicative, which I would be now. So I owe him an apology.
Yeah.
I would love to let him know how bad I felt about
it.
Yeah, but I do. It makes me so happy to see how well he's been doing and how smart he is.
Yeah.
When we went on a couple dates, and we only went on a few dates, I just got scared and ran away.
Yeah.
So, I remember he was at The Flea. I remember my first improv shows where I was going to see his improv team or whatever. I publicly am saying I'm very bad. So when you were saying, like, do you know people? And I do know several people. I can find the list, but Matt is one.
Do you know people that you want to talk to?
I would love to sit him down, but like I said, he doesn't certainly owe me anything. I don't necessarily deserve for him to be like, yeah, you are, but I feel bad.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. Hey. I'm growing as a person.
We never stop.
I know. Like 2.5 years ago, I was like, you should date people and not run away. And so I've been.
Things might work out better if I don't run away.
I mean, with that being said, I'm overly communicative. So, and actually it's been really good. It makes me stay friends with people regardless of whether I date them, like whether we last or not.
Yeah.
Usually it's pretty, works out in the end. Yeah.
Quite.
I know.
Very great.
But yeah, I admire him. I think he's very smart.
Yeah. That's good stuff. I'm very excited
is so
about
good.
The next phase of like what he's doing because I know that I'm desperate to be involved in some capacity.
I know.
But that's just like, that's what I do. I see a project that I want to be a part of and then I ask.
Yeah. I'm just rooting for him. He's just so good.
I don't doubt his success. Like,
yeah.
He already has it. And
I know.
There's just more to come.
I know.
Like what the pocket that he fills in like the world of theater is like so specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's like nerdy and fun and cartoony, but has more heart than you ever expected.
I was going to say, that's part of what I love about his show is this very smart. I think he's the kind of writer too that is constantly reworking it. You can tell based on his finished draft that it's
puffs, like,
yeah, it's been chiseled away
like every week for a year.
Right, exactly. And you can see that
because they even still continue to change things.
Right, and what I find a lot of times with playwrights and people in like who are writers, sometimes they're so in love with their own work, mm-hmm. they refuse to do rewrites or to actually make it better.
Kill their darling.
Yeah, pretty much. And so you can tell he's put so many hours into rewriting and like chiseling it down to the best version of itself. And one thing I also love about him is that the show has heart. It's not just jokes and bits and like a funny premise about Hufflepuffs. Yeah. You know, it really does have this full arc that makes you feel something in the end.
Brave, smart Puff and Snakes.
Right. No, that's good that you corrected me on that. Very important.
I'm a smart Huff cusp.
You're a what?
I took the test. And I'm smart with, like, almost equal amount of Puff in me.
What is the test?
Like, one of those like, online...
Oh, I haven't taken it.
Yeah, like, the official website has, like, their... And then the stage manager, Kayla, on, like, my first, like, day of training, gave me, like, this online test where someone took all of the questions, because, like, the official one only does, like, half of them, and this one has all of the questions. And I took it, and it was, like, 78% smart, 72% Puff. So that's where I lie.
I have a question. So I left... I have notes that I took. Let's talk about... Well, I want to finish talking about Puffs for sure, but then I have a couple things I want to talk about with your commercial work and
My very, very extensive commercial.
I made you send me your resume, and I was like, he's got a couple.
There's actually one thing out there, because my resume is from like May, and I started doing this awesome children's podcast.
Oh, cool.
Called Don't Break the Rules on Pinna.
Okay.
Pinna, do you know it?
No, but I remember one more thing I want to talk to you about. Yeah. What's Pinna?
Pinna's like it's a children's like audio entertainment company. It's like a subscription service, and they have like audiobooks and podcasts and stuff like that. And this one show, Don't Break the Rules, just uses voiceover actors to do like loosely improvised things. And my friend Jack Mitchell, who's a piano player for Story Pirates, recommended me for this, and they gave my name to the producer. That's how I got that thing.
I was about to say, I mean, it makes sense because I was going to say Story Pirates.
Literally every single thing that has ever paid me money to do, I could equate to like a friend.
Yeah, but that's good that someone would vouch for you in that way, because that's not always the case.
So I've done like 4 or 5 of these podcasts. I did like a live taping at Slate Fest.
Yeah.
I think Slate owns Pinna, if I'm not mistaken. And we were opening up for a different, like a parenting podcast. But this one is like, they're basically like, the rules are like, you don't break the rules. If you do, you lose. And you have to stay in character the whole time. So, like, we open up an envelope, and then we're given a character, and then we have to be that character the whole time with, like, a catchphrase and a name and whatever. And then we will play, like, basically improv games.
Oh, I love that. You're perfect.
Someone will lose a round, and then it's like 4, and then it's 2, and then you do a final battle. And the winner of it all gets to pick someone else to do the credits. It's so much fun.
I like it. It's so much fun.
I think we've recorded 2 seasons, and I know...
What are 2 seasons? Like, about how many episodes?
8 episodes or 10 episodes, I think.
Okay. Do they have a break in between seasons, or...?
I think so.
Okay.
It was, like, I joined when it was brand new.
Got it. So they're still, I mean, with everything, when you're starting it out, you kind of rebuild
and
it
just,
as you
also
go.
Also, just, like, this thing's, like... Half the people are like, we're already my friends going into it. Like, Jack Mitchell plays keys for it. Charlie Shirachi, her last name is so hard to say. I knew her from Story Pirates, and she's the host of it. And then Nick Canellis is also a Story Pirate who I know from The Magnet as well, did a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. It's just like fun playing with your friends.
I love that.
It was so much fun.
Oh, I remembered what I got excited about.
Oh, yeah,
so
ask a question.
You
just
did
rambling.
A recording that I listened to on Spotify for Story Pirates.
Oh, yeah.
With Lynn.
Yeah, I did. The wizard who can go poop. That was awesome. So I've been fortunate enough to have been like cast on a number of Story Pirate podcast songs, because I can carry a tune. And last fall, I found out that Story Pirates had like a program with, I think it was a symphony in Utah, to adapt children's stories set to classical music. And I was lucky enough to be cast in this rap set to Paco Bell's Canon. And I was cast as the wizard. Right. And Lynn wasn't involved at that time. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a one-off. We did it. It sounded great. It was on the podcast. Love it. And then apparently over the next few months, they were going to release their second album on Spotify. And unbeknownst to anybody, until we got the email, like all the people who were on the recording, like they're like, hey, by the way, we have a secret. Lin-Manuel Miranda recorded the rap as the dragon on Wizard Goes Poof in his home studio.
And I love it for multiple things. I love that you were working with him, even though you weren't in the same room.
I never met him. No, right. I met him, but I did not record
but
with him.
But I love that. But he I heard also
Lin-Manuel Miranda heard me rap.
I know, on the same song. But
I
it's also
him.
What do you do? Yeah. Your character has so much power. Yeah. But the other thing I really love about it is just that he's still paying it forward for, you know what I mean?
He's been a friend of Story Pirates since
I know.
Day one.
And Drama Bookshop.
Yeah.
So Pirates used to be based in Drama Bookshop.
Yeah, so Story Pirates had like, their one of their first offices was in the basement of Drama Bookshop, and like directly opposite them was Lin-Manuel Miranda writing in the Heights.
Right.
Whatever year that was.
But I love that he's still connected.
2004 or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. But
and
he's still paying it forward in that
he,
way.
He has
you know?
Come to Story Pirate shows with his son.
Mm-hmm.
Because he loves Story Pirates, and like he wanted his son to check it out.
Yeah.
And then like the Drama Bookshop closed, and his management one of his companies who like runs the Hamilton bookstore basically bought Drama Bookshop and is just like
yeah.
continued to like
I
help
just
him
love
be
that.
A friend.
He's also an example of just someone who is kind and pays it forward.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting so many opportunities. Like, his career is huge now. But he doesn't forget who he is, who he cares about,
yeah.
and, like, how to pay it forward in that way.
Yeah.
I think he's just great.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was talking with someone else on my... I've gushed about him a couple times just because he seems like such a decent human being. I also just like that he's so loyal to people around him, which I would think Matt's pretty similar with, like, his cast.
I mean,
I
feel like most of the people, or a lot of the people who were in Kapowee Go Go
mm-hmm.
were in Puffs.
Yeah.
It's all of their Flea friends, because it's, like, just a big theater community. And, like, a lot... Not all, but a lot of the people who have joined Puffs since, like, OG cast members have left have basically been, like, in the family. Whether it's, like, more Flea people. Like, I know a lot of the Swings were involved in the Flea. Or, like, a couple Story Pirates. Like, Keith Rubin is, like, Cedric now.
Mm-hmm.
He, of course, got cast on his own merit. But, like, it was a kind of part of, like, an extended family. It's just like you keep playing with the people that you like playing with.
Yeah, well, I like the idea of building each other up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not about just using someone and then moving forward
and
abandoning the people who you respect and care about.
Right.
It's about like everyone building each other up.
Yeah.
I think that's what's
like,
so exciting.
Do you watch Fleabag?
No, but
Fleabag is devastatingly amazing.
Our mutual friend Beth posted that status about tickets.
It's so
good. I know.
Oh my god. I was watching an interview with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who's like the writer, creator of Fleabag, and like the woman who is cast as her sister is like one of her friends for like years.
Yeah.
Like 10 years, decades, or whatever. And like she fought for her friend to be in that part. She's like, she's perfect. She may not have the credits, but she's perfect for this part.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have her, and she's incredible.
I'll probably watch it tonight.
There's two seasons, total 12 episodes,
okay.
22 minutes long each. It's devastatingly hilarious and, like, heart-wrenching.
That's what I've heard. I obsess over one show at a time.
Oh,
so I just finished The Boys, and now I'll move on to this. Yeah. Yeah.
Stop. Fucked up was that airplane scene.
Yeah, it was kind of traumatic.
It was aggressively traumatic,
but
that was like the point. It needed right. to be.
I mean, I don't mind gore or shock factor if both the storytelling is strong
yeah.
and the reason for it is validated.
And I feel like it, that scene was
exactly
incredibly so, validating. It like really is a test, like an underline on who that guy is.
Right. I love the premise of that show, though.
It's based on a comic book.
That's what I've heard. And that was the thing where I've heard people say maybe it's too gory, and I don't know the comic book, but apparently the comic book is just as,
you know. Gore adds a more visceral realness to everything that's happening, because it's also a commentary on just, like, superhero movies in general. Like, they don't show what would actually happen to people if what they did to them, if they did what they did to them.
Right. I think that's the part that I really loved, like, at least in the beginning.
It's not like a spongy hammer that hits someone across the room. Like, it's a piece of metal that's supposed
to be... Yeah, what is it in reality? That's supposedly
heavier than 1,000 stars. So, like, you would pulverize a human being if you hit him with a hammer.
Right, exactly. What is the reality if this yeah. is the, if this is it, what is what else is true? Yeah.
But I digress.
I love it. I gotta watch the Fleabag. So we've hitched so many it's other things. Yeah,
I know. I don't talk about myself.
I want to talk about you, too. I was going to say the show ends, you said, on Sunday.
Yeah.
Are you feeling bitter?
I'm surprised with how...
Nostalgic, like, or...
How much I'm affected by the end of it.
Yeah.
As someone who literally performed twice.
But you were still around. I mean, you
know, I was... I tried... I was supposed to, like, at least see the show once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten lazy about that now that the quotes are.
You're on tonight.
But it's just like, I was supposed to see at least once a week, and I have mm-hmm. like a filmed version of the show on my phone. So, like, when I knew what was going on, I was just like watching it nonstop. Oh,
yeah.
To memorizing. That's how I memorized Puffs. I watched someone else saying it and just listened to it over and over again. Also, just like as an actor, like, yes, I wanted to make my own, but also I wanted to do like the actual principles. Performance justice. It's my take on it,
yeah.
But like, it's such a well-oiled machine. I don't want to throw anyone off unless I'm given a moment to actually like throw people off. But it's so fast-paced, like you kind of just have to like be the gear that like connects everything. I don't remember what I was saying other than that.
Oh no, I was just asking about the end.
I'm surprised myself that like I was talking to a bunch of my friends last night who were in the cast, and like how, like I know I can't imagine what they're feeling as there's 4 original cast members who've been in it since day one.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't imagine what they're feeling because like I'm devastated that it's ending. Like I was hoping that it was gonna go on for like ever. And, like,
I'm such a sentimental person.
Like, at some point, like if like someone left the cast, that I would have the opportunity to like be bumped up to like. A principal.
Yeah, that's the hard part about this too. Is probably that would be the case, you know.
And also, like, I have nothing lined up after. So
yeah.
Like,
how do you handle that? Like that part of it? Because
how I handle like my career in general, just go back to wing tables and just like keep my eye open for projects I want to be a part of.
Yeah. Do you get anxious or do you?
I wish I did.
No, it's healthy that you don't.
I don't think I get. I do like have a lot of conversations about like frustrations where I am in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's hilarious that I'm calling it my career because like I don't give myself enough credit.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just like I'm going back to making money, paying rent. I'm like generally a very happy person. Like if I like I always say like if I can pay my rent and feed myself and have fun, then like I'm good.
You have such a healthy way of viewing it.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, this is a very successful off-Broadway show at New World Stages, but, I mean, if someone's in a Broadway show, they have a TV show, a movie, whatever, I mean, that happens, and it's exciting, but then...
It can be
everything usually ends, you know? There's very few shows that end after 10 years or something like that. So, you know, how do you... I'm not good with that.
No, I'm...
By my nature, I like stability, and I'm a planner.
I'm
a planner.
I'm not a planner, but I like stability.
I'm a planner, and I like stability. Yeah. I like to know, like, a 6-month plan, a 12-month plan.
I have a lot of actor friends who have, like, 10,000 jobs that are not performing, and they just do thing, thing, and thing. Like, I could never do that, not knowing if I could pay my rent. is very daunting to me. Yeah. And like I lived in that world for like a couple months and I really didn't enjoy it. It was like stability of the shop. And also I've been at my restaurant for long enough now and I have a really great relationship with my GM where like she is very adaptable within reason, you know, like she will do her best to like accommodate the schedule that I request because of X, Y, and Z. And it's a large enough place where it's like it's easy to get for coverage for shifts if like my manager sends me a random audition like last minute. So like I like that. So
it's hard to find that kind of job though.
Yeah, and it took years to like feel safe and comfortable there.
Mm-hmm.
But like post puffs, just gonna continue to pursue my friends who I know create stuff. And then maybe hopefully see something come my way that like I actually really, really want to be a part of.
Yeah. How did you get your commercials? Because you list them. You said Samsung and Etsy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was on the Etsy commercial for 5 seconds. I made out with a stranger.
I love Etsy.
It took us 4 hours to get to the location.
Was this a national?
I think it was just online.
Okay.
I think it was just YouTube. It has like millions of views. Mm-hmm. Weird for me to think about millions of people watching me kiss a stranger. But it took 4 hours to drive to North Fork of Long Island. We were there for 2 hours, then another 4 hours back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Samsung commercial, oh my God, it was like my favorite audition. One of my favorite auditions. And my buddy was there too. We just had to sing karaoke.
That's great.
And I sang...
This is right up your alley.
I sang Inside Out by Eve Six. And then I sang Basket Case. And like I could tell that one guy just did not like me, but the director of it was like, "Yeah, really great song choices." And I did not expect to get a call back, and yeah. I got a call back.
How could you tell that the other guy didn't like you? Was he just not friendly?
Maybe I just assumed he didn't like me because he didn't give me any sort of reaction response. Where he's just like, "All right, that's enough."
Yeah.
I just assumed, but I booked it.
Yeah.
I shot in like Chinatown, and I gave a girl a piggyback ride, and we sang karaoke.
And I assume they paid pretty well. Was that also online?
It was. I think that was digital only as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-union, so it's like it's not like
not
crazy good
great.
Money.
Mm-hmm.
But like for a day's work, it's more than I would make at my restaurant. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was
fun. How did you get those auditions?
So it was my manager that I freelance with.
Okay.
Avanti Talent, and I got that manager, my only manager, from Happy Karaoke Funtime. Do you remember that?
No.
Happy Karaoke Fun Time, musical improv, but instead of a band,
I
used
think,
karaoke tracks.
I think I'm old, like, I'm newer to the,
okay.
like, I've only been doing
Do you know
musical
Philip
improv last couple years. Yes.
Yeah, so he created that. He
okay.
brought it from Chicago.
Philip is great.
We did it for, like, a few years. Everyone in that cast was just a bunch of musical megawatt
uh-huh.
performers. And one day, he was like, hey, I have some industry coming to... our show. We had like an 8-show, 12-show off-Broadway run at Davenport Theater, like one day a week, late nights, like we just like took over the stage.
He's another one I love the way
he like,
hustles,
I had,
you know?
I wish I had the gene of like a producer.
Yeah, he's
and
great.
It's like doesn't, it's not second nature for me. Like it's so, it feels like so much work for me and I don't have the drive to be a producer and he constantly creates.
Yeah,
like,
I find him really.
Him and like Lulu Krause.
Yep.
Like one of my favorite human beings in the fucking world.
I literally watched she composed a song like in like 6-part harmony that she sang today that I watched on my way.
I don't understand how she makes everything she makes and also has a 9-to-5.
Yeah. Yeah, I admire people like
that. I love
that
human being literally with all of my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Like she is one of the best human beings in the world.
Yeah.
She was also on Pyros for 4 years.
Yeah. Pyros is your musical improv team.
Old musical improv team. And Lulu is on my new musical improv team, Nightshade.
Yeah.
Tuesday nights at the Magna Theater.
yeah.
But yeah, so Happy Karaoke Fun Time, which was a show that I got an audition for because friends recommended me to do it. He brought industry to one of our shows at the Davenport. And then Avanti reached out to people they wanted to reach out to because they probably had slots they needed to fill for different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how I got that manager.
That's great.
And then it's freelancing, very like casual, like send me out when they have the things, but it's not like an aggressive, like it's not like an agent or anything like that. It's like, it's not like I'm going to hustle for this person. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, these things line up. I'm going to send you out.
Have you submitted to agencies and representation?
No. I'm not.
You should while you're doing puffs.
I keep hearing that.
Yeah. Is there anyone in puffs that would maybe recommend you for their agencies?
Probably. Something that I
definitely. It's kind of a hard conversation to have.
That I don't pursue. That's like my.
I get very uncomfortable asking questions like that because you don't want someone to feel used.
I want someone
for your relationship.
I want someone to like do it on their own.
It feels.
I don't know.
Is that
how Josh? Like, that's like my only anxiety. Is just like I'm in my way.
Yeah.
You know.
We all are though.
Yeah.
We all are. Did Josh reach out to you about the?
I think
the meeting?
We were just like chatting one day, and then I was just saying, like, "Yeah, I don't know how to do this. Like, I'm doing it, but I don't know how to do this. Like, I'm freelancing with the manager, but I also want to like have a commercial like agent, and I want to like go off for legit stuff." And Josh was like, "Oh, let me see if I can get a meeting with you.
I'm similar to you. I have a commercial manager." But that's all I have right now, and I'd really like to get an agent. I didn't look for an agent for a long time because typecasting really made me anxious and made me insecure.
Yeah.
And now I feel, because of comedy, much more comfortable in my
own
skin.
Like, I feel like things are like a lot of like atypical for like the media standards. Like people are making products for their voice.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's not what they think that people want. Like, that's why you have shows like Fleabag and the Black Lady Sketch Show. Like, holy shit, that's amazing that exists. Lauren Ashley Smith, known from the Magnum Theater. I think she's show running that, or at least a big producer on it.
Oh, really? I mean,
that's
surprising.
And she's a story pirate, too.
Very nice.
Very hilarious, talented. also look at,
it's exciting.
Call
time.
Me, or Always
Which
Be
one?
My Baby.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's a movie on Netflix starring two Asian people, which is just like.
Oh yeah. That is in my queue.
And they don't talk about Asianness. It's just Asian people star. It's not a rom com about being Asian. It's just like a rom com that stars people.
I wish I remember who said this quote. It's someone very famous, and I wish I remembered. But there was a great quote about, I want people of color to just be able to make their version of rom-coms and bad shows, bad movies, but like that there's such a surplus of opportunity that people can fail. You know, I think it's an exciting time for that, you know.
I loved how mediocre Crazy Rich Asians was.
You know what though, I love that people showed up for it. Because it was important for what
it
represents,
so
you know.
But that movie was very much about its Asianness.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Really,
it's
cool,
exciting. We're moving away from
that. Maybe is just a rom-com.
I need to see. Is it The Farewell?
Oh, with Awkwafina.
I want to see that so
see that
badly. I know I'm going to cry the whole time.
Probably.
But that's an example of one that, yes, she's Chinese. That is a part of the story, but it's a human story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think. It's universal. It's not just about.
Yeah.
It's an Asian story for an Asian market, and that's
it.
You know.
It's just a
story. Yeah.
You can resonate. You can put your own.
I was having this conversation the other day because I always feel very insecure about being part Asian and very white because I feel like I can't own or say that I'm Asian because people are going to judge the worthiness of that statement. But I was raised in an Asian household, so it's the thing I always feel conflicted about. But I was saying I would love to see casting in a show or a story where it has nothing to do with the story, but the family is diverse. And not just like one ethnicity, and we're mixed to show like, oh, we're hip with the times. Mm-hmm. It's like truly like they don't necessarily look like they're related.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a hodgepodge of a melting pot family. Because that's what it is.
You see more in theater with that happening.
I know. That's the reality of how society is. You know, like someone's a quarter this, an eighth this.
Yeah. It's getting better.
Yeah, I think so, but that's something I still haven't seen, you know, and I want to. It made me very happy to see.
Make it.
I know. What were we talking about?
I have no idea.
Oh, we were talking about the commercial.
Oh, the commercial.
I was saying...
the agent. So the other stuff, I'm pretty sure both of those commercials were because of that. But I also... So TJ Maddox... another amazing human
TJ
being.
TJ is also great.
Love
yeah.
TJ. Know him from the Magnet Theater. He was on one. He was on my first musical improv team, Rebound.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Oh yeah, I'm the most OG musical improviser at the Magnet.
I didn't know that. Performer. I knew that. Yeah.
There are people who have been around longer, but like they're not active. But like, we were on Rebound with each other. The first season of Musical Megawatt, right after like Coral Rage and what was the name of the other group? I don't remember. But like they had like shows on Friday, but then they had like a Tuesday night musical night finally happening. I think that was like 9 years ago. But TJ started teaching an on-camera commercial class at the Magnet. I mean, it took like a couple levels, and then I made a point to try to just run camera at least once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we met a lot of commercial like casting directors and stuff like that. And like TJ always makes a point, and he like hammers home like nice people matter, and he will only bring in like casting directors and agents and other actors who he likes,
mm-hmm.
who are nice, who are open, ready, willing, and able to like accept people. And I've gotten a lot of like random auditions from those casting directors.
I love that.
Just like reach out, because like I'm of a type. I am a racially ambiguous individual, which fulfills a certain promise on certain casting breakdowns. And I feel like I've gotten like maybe a thing or two from that. So I can't remember if like the Samsung and the Etsy were both from my manager, or if like they were just like who reached out to me.
Yeah. I've done one commercial. It was an American Express commercial.
Like, national?
It was also digital. But it was the weirdest experience for me, because it was an extensive audition process, but I felt like such a fraud, because it didn't feel like acting to me.
It wasn't. They're not casting you as an actor. They're casting you as a type.
And I had platinum blonde hair at the time, and they were specifically looking for someone blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Had nothing to do with anything. They just were looking for someone with blonde hair. And I remember it was one of those commercials where there's like a voiceover and then someone doing the action.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the person doing the action. And I'm literally...
As voiceover artists get paid a certain amount. And if you were speaking on camera, it would cost that much more.
I don't even know if it's that. American Express has... Lynn has actually done this same commercial.
Oh.
Just one of their series of them. Where it's like a local New York business.
Walking around doing
his
thing.
It was that type of commercial where it's like a local business owner in New York City talking about their business. And then I just am randomly searching their business online and like going through the thing. That's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
But it was so... I mean, the director was so nice. But it was so weird because it was such a big set. And I'm the only actor for the scene or whatever. And they do, and that's a wrap for Tiffany. And I just felt so weird because I just sat at a computer. You don't even see my face for half of it. It's just my backside with my blonde hair. And I'm just screening through the site. The computer is like, of course, not on. It's just, you know, they're gonna edit it out later.
Yeah.
But that's all I did. There was no dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing. And then they are
just
all
body.
Yeah. And then all these strangers that I didn't get to formally meet or bond with, which I would have loved that, but there was nothing to have that opportunity. They're working. They all start clapping for me, and I was just like, this is the weirdest.
How was catering?
Fake, huh?
How was the catering?
How was it what?
The catering. How was it?
Oh, the catering. You know what? To be honest, so the makeup artist really and the hairstylist, she saved us. So she, and I had a mutual friend with her who worked at the Food Network. She does a lot of TV shows at the Food Network.
Yeah.
She was amazing. But it was me and another girl called that day. And this girl was beautiful. She was like a model who was brought on for like, so the woman's business was a spa or something. So she was like the person in the spa having the business or whatever. But they weren't really that great to us. The director was very nice, but they like did not tell us about Crafty. They didn't tell us about, you know, how long we'd be around. So we're in this like back room for hours with the hair and makeup. And she was the one who is like, I'm going to find out what's happening for you. Let's go get you food and water. Like, let's take care of you. And there was like all this food and like great stuff, but no one was telling us about it, which was, but this was also non-union.
Yeah.
I think that's important
which
to say.
Which shouldn't be like an excuse for like treating
no,
people like
but,
trash.
But it allows them to treat you however they want. You're not protected.
Twice.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got paid pretty well. I was happy with having some money to pay my rent that month, you know, but Yeah, I think the non-union thing, they can
print
do that.
Print stuff is where the money is.
Print stuff?
Print stuff pays so much more. I've done two print gigs.
One, I've done
one
two as
on
well.
One was on my resume with an HBO Now. It was like a 2 or 3 day shoot.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
And do you know Chano Garcia? Old school musical matter. Why he does
no, I
sketch.
Don't.
He also does like a Spanish language.
I think
show.
I think we didn't overlap. Okay. Yeah.
But he sent me a screenshot on his HBO Now, and it was me sitting with a diverse group of individuals, like with a remote in my hand, like turning a TV on. Cause like, oh, that was the most humbling thing. Cause this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I was 33. And I was cast as a young adult. Like, I was cast as, like, college-aged with a bunch of, like, people 10 years younger than me.
Well, this makes it, I think you can play a pretty broad spectrum of ages.
Give me the right clothes and the hair or whatever. But, so I was with a bunch of, like, young 20-somethings. And then there was also a group of adults who were all younger than me.
Yeah.
Playing older than me.
Yeah.
Felt really good.
I just think of my community theater production of King and I, which questionable to do. King and I.
Why are people still doing that?
Yeah, but I was Lady Tig, and I was like 16 at the time, and my son was 13, and it was like, this is weird. And then all the actors who were playing the actual adults with me were like in their 40s and 50s.
Community theater.
There you go.
I did Annie Get Your Gun, and it was Tommy Keeler because I was the closest thing they could find to a Native American.
Oh yeah, see, these are sad.
Also I had hair below my shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad we're realizing this isn't appropriate.
If I was asked to be Tommy Keeler again, I would say, fuck no!
I was Maria in West Side Story, and now I look back and I realize, don't do that.
I was not okay. In West Side Story.
My brother
was Because I
was
one of, like, four cast members who were not white.
Yeah.
Half of the sharks were also Jets.
Yeah.
Team theater, the suburbs.
I get people loving the show, and like, we weren't having those important conversations at that point, so people don't realize.
In hindsight, also, it's like, did West Side Story now, even though the whole thing is about... No, the whole thing is about race. Like, you have to cast racially sensitive.
Yeah.
You can't put on West Side Story in
a community
that has 100% white people.
I know. I remember, actually, my Tony, he was one of my best friends, crazy good singer. I keep trying to get him to move up here, but he's Guamanian. And he was Tony, so I was like, I mean, hey, really?
Hey, if you're going to be blind cast everything.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, that's great. And then my brother was...
It can be about race, how you talk about it, but like, you just perform.
Chino. My brother was Chino, who is engaged to Maria. I'm not going to edit that out.
Thank you.
This is going to get sloppier and sloppier.
Yeah. Do you get another round?
But it's so kind of gross when you think about my brother was Chino and I was Maria in that. But... my brother is a little bit tanner, and my grandmother always says he looks more Japanese than me, and I'm like, thank you so much for
But well, my younger sister looks like a tan white girl who happens to have like a lot of freckles.
Yeah,
like maybe a touch of Filipino. My older sister, I think, looks less Caucasian, but not Asian. Like, she had she moved to Durango, Colorado, and had straight, like, dark brown hair down below her shoulders, and everyone spoke Spanish to her.
Yeah. It's interesting how genetics work.
Yeah.
A lot of people...
I'm the most Asian of my sister.
A lot of Russian people think I'm Russian.
Because there's a lot of, like, Chinese cross-pollination.
Yeah, so I guess I look like people... Yeah. But it's people from Russia.
But that also makes me realize why a lot of people thought my older sister looked Mexican or Hispanic. Mm-hmm. Because, like, where did all, like, the natives come from? They came over that ice bridge from China originally. So, like, there's a lot of, like, cross-pollination.
Yeah, it makes sense. For sure.
What were we talking about?
Oh my god, this thing has gone to become a mess.
Is that we can call?
You know what? I like the idea of drinking while I do this podcast.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah.
We can have a conversation.
I know. Talk. It feels casual. we were talking about your print, and you said
I also did like a pharmaceutical print job that had to cover up all my tattoos, and they hated my hair. I'm like, why did you cast me if, like, this is not what you wanted?
Do you feel comfortable taking pictures, like, print and photo, like,
well,
being a model?
It was literally just, like, super casual. It's not, like, fashion.
For a long time, I was very insecure with that kind of thing.
I feel weird about fashion modeling, but like I would get if people wanted to hire me, like I'd get used to it fast.
Yeah.
But it was literally like, cause like I'm an improviser, so I'm just fucking around with everybody around me and just making people laugh.
My thing is more self-induced insecurity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like improv, I'm fine with. Like, let's get messy.
It's just an improv scene where they're telling me to take pictures. Like literally, they're giving us prompts and like just do your scene. Like with the pharmaceutical thing, I was like a nurse who was like basically telling someone they're dying, and like these are like pills or something. I don't know exactly what it was, but like I literally was just like, all right, time to talk about all your symptoms. Like, and it was weird. It was like dramatic improv. Here we go.
Yeah.
Take the notes. You just keep going and keep talking. With the HBO thing, it was like we're five friends just fucking around watching TV. We like sat in like a park, and like the photographer was like phone died or something. I was like, oh, I'll just put music on.
Do you feel like you're good at auditions?
Depends on the audition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that experienced doing self-tapes. I had to do one last week. Hated it.
But I feel like the great thing about self-tapes is you can just keep doing it until you feel good about it.
A point where you reach like diminishing returns where you're just like constantly editing it. Like,
I gotta be honest, I'm pretty lazy about it. I'm like, I prepare.
And I was like, I can't judge my own performance.
Yeah.
I can just tell if I make a weird face, and like roommate Leah just like tell me if this is good or not, if we need to do another take.
I prepare and then I do maybe five takes and then that's it.
I usually feel pretty comfortable in an audition room, especially if like I have sides that like I prepped in advance. But honestly, I would rather do a cold read audition, script in hand, than do like a you have to memorize this and go in and do a monologue. Like, I'm not a classically trained actor. Like, I don't want to do Shakespeare. I don't want to do Mamet. I don't want to do any of that. Like,
your skills would translate to it though pretty easily if you wanted to.
Probably.
And honestly, it would probably make you a better auditioner. Yeah. Than the standard, just because you aren't coming in with like, you know, an assumption of how to behave.
Yeah, but that's also like I don't treat like this the way that like I probably should, and the way that like a lot of other people do. I've had like fun things happen. I'm not aggressive about it though.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I find commercial auditions. This is part of, like, I met with my manager recently. I was like, look, just send me out a lot because I need to get better at these. Because I find with commercial auditions, like, because they love improvisers, most of the times I get appointments because of comedy background. Yeah. Like, people sell me on stage or a recommendation or something like that. And they can vary. Like, I remember I did like a luggage commercial, Away Luggage. I did a commercial audition. It was like, they had submitted me or whatever, and it was with a teleprompter, quickly moving, but they want you to improvise bits in between the lines, and then you're sitting in this commercial actually aired and they didn't change any of it. So for Away Luggage, they have like, it was a Christmas one for last Christmas, and you're sitting in the fireplace and you're drinking your hot cocoa and you're like making these bits, and they use the same actor for multiple commercials with it, and I just was so unsure of like how many bits off the cusp do I make and how much do I watch the moving teleprompter that's like has a long monologue I'm supposed to be saying. And we didn't get the lines beforehand, so we get it 5 minutes before we go in the room. And so as opposed to an eBay commercial I did where it was completely just like no speaking, you're pretending you're on your phone and just winging it, you know? Like, for me, I gotta get better at those.
But that's why they love improvisers, because like, you can just be in the moment and just do it.
They do, but both of those, I was like, I could get better if I got more comfortable owning this room instead of waiting to see what the room wants of me. You know what I mean?
I think, I guess, maybe that is my advantage, because I just don't care.
That's good. I've gotten better about not caring to an extent.
That's not like 100% true, but like I feel like.
But I feel comfortable if I've done reps.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if an audition, and this is any audition, is outside of the normalcy of what I've done in the past, it takes me a second to readjust.
Yeah.
You know, I don't come in like blaring and just like, okay, this is how I'm going to do the version of this. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Those, the two commercials I shot,
It sounds like you're good at auditions, though.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's the right, I feel like there, I mean, like with everyone, there are certain things that are, like, in the wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. I actually, for, like, half a year, or maybe a year, I did a bunch of, like, industrials.
Mm-hmm.
For, what is the company called? I can't remember. But they, I basically ran a teleprompter, wore a nice button down that almost covered all my tattoos, and just talk to people about the bull and bear market or how to appropriately behave in the workplace or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a company that just like, that's what they shot. And I felt really good doing it. It was like really fun and really just like absurd. And also there was one that I did. It was about just like setting up the Wi-Fi in your office or dealing with a new like internet server. And it was used at Condé Nast, where Lulu Krauss works. And she learned how to use her computer internet because of me.
That's great.
I haven't seen any copy of that. Any video of that. But I did like, there was like an audition for some children's thing. I think that's where like my general tone and demeanor is like suited for children's stuff. Like Story Pirates is like so in my wheelhouse.
I feel so bad. I auditioned for Story Pirates not too long ago, but I totally missed my audition because I made it not child friendly. I made it kind of perverted scene, and then they were like,
That's a thumbs down.
Yeah, it wasn't on purpose. I was just like,
no, it's hard.
Oh, improv, got yeah, this. And no. Then I was like, oh, you should be thinking about this
but
while you do scenes.
We're casting the best improviser or the funniest person. We're casting someone who just has the, like, unteachable quality. We don't have the time for all of the tone learning. Like, I know so many brilliant story pirates who auditioned 4 times.
Yeah.
Natasha Rothwell, who is, like, a writer on Insecure and a, like, star on Insecure. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure she told me she auditioned twice or something like that. Like, I know so many people who...
I felt it was a good audition, like, but I was like, just like, oh, the tone was way off.
The tone is just, like, is paramount. And also, but the performing style is so weird that, like...
Yeah,
that,
I just wasn't
that,
familiar
that,
enough,
I've
which
so
I should have done my work.
Actors who, like, think they try to do the tone, but then, like, their improv goes out the door.
Yeah.
Or, like, they got the improv, but, like, the tone is just, like, or the style is just, like, not there. It's, like, it's really, really... hard. Like it's like, it's such like a little like niche like
it's interesting
style.
When they do such a good job of managing those auditions to like make
it's
you understand it
audition.
Yeah, it's so great and welcoming and warm, and everyone in my group was like really sweet and nice and talented. Everyone was talented.
It's
but
so
the minute
fun.
I don't even know if it was like what I did was it was something too adult, but I don't remember what I did, but I was like, oh, oops.
Come back again. Try again.
Yeah, but I don't mind that. I like it's a learning curve for sure. And I haven't done much children's theater. I've done a lot of more adults.
I mean, we don't think of ourselves as a children's theater.
No, but I think but it is geared towards
like,
a child
story
audience.
I'm doing a show this week.
Uh huh.
Which your listeners will not be able to see.
Yeah, this won't come out this week.
It's called An After Dark. And
oh, cool.
It's literally a story pirate show that happens in front of an audience of only adults.
Oh, I love that.
So it's
do you have
still,
to change the way you perform?
We are instructed not to.
Cool.
We are performing the same way we would in front of like 500 elementary school kids. The only difference is like a lot of the stories that we choose to do are on our like do not perform list or on our adults only list, because like it's still written by a kid, still adapted by us, but it's just like this would not go over well in a crowd of like 500 kids.
Gotcha.
But we love it, so we're gonna do it in front of adults.
I understand that.
But like
yeah,
we still have the whole thing of like crossing the line, and like we don't cross the line. We're not swearing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do anything like that. Like if like someone flubs in a moment, like it's not a big deal, but like our intention going into the show is to do a pure story pirate show, but for adults.
Yeah, I love that.
Which is super fun.
I love that the company exists. I think that's great. So I know. I didn't even feel bad when it didn't, like, when I realized I flipped up. I was like, this is...
It's too.
It wasn't even so much that. It was just I then now understood what it is. Because I've never seen a story pirate show, you know?
Most important, like, auditions to, like, be so aware of, like, tone.
Yeah, yeah.
That's also, like, how I felt about, like, Puffs going in. Like, I saw it twice, and I knew the character decently well. So, like, I knew the heightened reality. Like,
that's a great example to compare.
Like, you can always hear through the door when people audition. And I was just, like, one or two people, I just, like, oh, you're not nailing the tone of this. Like,
right.
Take direction, blah, blah, blah. But, like, it's, like, one of
that's
those...
That's a perfect example,
like,
too.
One of those things where it's, like, you have such a limited time training someone, you can't spend half of rehearsals teaching the tone of the show.
They have to fit in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, perfect. That's a great example. Yeah. And I honestly, Puffs is a perfect example. If I hadn't seen what had been developed, I would not have known how to audition for that. I mean, I haven't auditioned for them, but
you have an idea of how you would.
Yeah, if you were to, because you've seen it. Yeah. Otherwise you can't conceptualize it. What was I going to say? So, I'm going to wrap it up with their nymph show, Peter Who.
Yes! So much fun. So Peter Who, another show that I got because of friends, because I did another show, and I got that because of improv people. So Justin Moran wrote Peter Who, and I was in a musical of his at the Fringe Festival like 5 years ago, called Nightfall on Moronga Island. And that was the second production of that because I saw it at the Magnet when the Magnet repainted their entire set to look like a pirate ship. And it's like, it's crossed between like Monty Python and like Pirates of Penzance.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine needed to be a part of it, bugged him constantly. I went to Nightfall probably like 10 times when it was at the Magnet, partied with him all the time. And he knew that I wanted to be a part of it, so he told me what auditions were when they were doing the festival. He cast me, and then we had a run, and that was it. And then years later, he's living in L.A. This is last summer. Living in L.A., I hear Peter Who is, like, gonna happen, and I hit him up on Facebook Messenger. I was like, yo, dude, if you're casting, like, let me know.
I love that.
Like, I want to do this show. And I auditioned via Skype.
I love that you reached out, though.
Yeah.
Because even with people I'm, like, close friends with, I'm always a little bit afraid of them feeling used or taken advantage of, which is not that. I think they can always say
no. With any casting
situation. You know what I mean?
They need someone. They need someone.
Yeah, exactly.
So why not have someone audition who is already passionate about the
project? That's the right way to think about it. But for a long time, I never thought of this as networking.
Like, I never thought of how I do things as networking. It wasn't literally until the last like, month when I'm like, oh, this is how I network to get more gigs.
Yeah.
So I guess I do know how to do this.
I mean, you're doing great. You're doing so well.
I'm doing
so
things.
Many people would love to be in these shows. I know.
Peter Who was so much fun. It was such a fast
I tried to
process.
See it, and it was sold out, so I couldn't go.
It was great. You missed out.
I know. I specifically, my half-brother was in town, and he was like, let's see a show. And I was like, we're going to go see Peter Who. My friend is in it. It looks amazing. Completely sold out.
Oh my god, it was so much fun. But like, so I had a Skype audition with him. Like, I was reading like two or three different parts. I knew I wasn't right for three of them, and I knew I was perfect for Flash Thompson, who I ended up getting cast as. But I because of the way the lighting was or whatever, like, I had to use my roommate's room to record my audition, and I just did a Skype conversation audition. I didn't have to sing anything. He knew I could carry a tune, and then I got cast. We had like five or six rehearsals.
Yeah,
or like 2 weeks of rehearsals. Every other show had like a month. We had 2 weeks because Justin flew in from California.
Uh huh. What is he doing in California?
He lives there with his wife, two kids.
He's writing.
I don't know if he's writing for any shows right now, but I know he's winning a lot of like awards. Mm-hmm. He actually sat in with Nightshade a couple weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
Because he's really good friends.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah.
I saw that.
But he was in town
mm-hmm.
because he's trying to find a theater to put a show on.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. And of course, we don't.
That's impressive. He's bi-coastal in that way.
Trying. He was in town for like 6 weeks. They like treat like half vacation, half like.
Yeah.
Figuring things out.
Does he write for television?
I think he wants to.
Okay.
He's won a lot of like a number of television like screenwriting awards like for a sci-fi pilot he wrote.
Gotcha. So he has accolades for submissions
he's had accolades and like I know he's been having meetings and stuff like that. I don't know really what else he has in the works, but
that's great.
Yeah. But he's like such a funny, has such a specific comedic voice in the same way that like Matt Cox does with Puffs. It's like I think that's like my wheelhouse, like slightly heightened reality, a little cartoony.
Yeah.
Like Flash Thompson was like a cartoon character. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with like the Spider-Man comics, but he's like the bully.
No, I don't know.
He bullies Peter.
I mean, yeah. I love Spider-Man comics, but there's so many different versions. Like I don't think I read those versions.
Like a bro asshole.
Yeah.
Who picks on
and that
him.
Was you?
Who gets? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Who like picks on Peter and like dates the girl that Peter wants to date.
I can see you playing this
and part. I had two songs.
You're so nice though. Well, I think you can play a dick.
I was told in TJ's on camera audition class that my type on camera is variations of a douchebag.
Really?
Whether it's like a prep school kid or a surfer.
I've been told the opposite for casting purposes. I'm always told I would never play the villain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, great, thank you.
I'm really good at being a dick. But yeah, I had two songs in Peter Who. One of them was about myself, which was like, what was it called? Like Hurricane Flash, sung in like the style of Sweet Transvestite from.
I love
what's
that.
What's it called? It's
like Rocky Horror.
Rocky Horror, yeah.
Yeah.
And so like that's literally like when we broke the character is when our director was like, No. This is your Sweet Transvestite song. Like, you're cocky motherfucker and, like, you're a rock star. Like,
I like that Rocky Horror is a reference.
Yeah. Like, literally, like, you're David Bowie. You're a Rocky Horror. Like, this
nice.
Is, like, think about that going into the song. And that was when we found it. It wasn't working until that point.
Isn't it exciting to be a part of a new show, though?
Well, like, this wasn't the first time the show was done.
Where you did Fringe, right?
Peter Who, well, not even that. Fringe was a different show. Peter Who was initially created, or its first inception was called The Spidey Project, and this was when Turn Off the Dark was coming out, like that expensive hot mess of a Spider-Man Broadway musical, like Julie Taymor, Bono, and they, Justin and John Raphael, his writing partner and incredible human being with pipes of liquid velvet, John Raphael, I hope he listens to this, they challenged themselves to write a fully realized Spider-Man musical in 30 days with no budget and have it open before Turn Off the Dark. And they got like a viral following. Like the dude who wrote the theme song to the Tick animated show like saw like the blog posts and like reached out to them and
that's
was like,
so
I wanna write half the music. I wanna write the music for this.
Yeah.
And like they all the music, the two act musical is in four parts on YouTube. You can see it. A lot of magnet performers are in it, including Robin Rothman, who's on Nightshade right now. Louis Perlman, Michael Lutton is in it.
Really?
He played Uncle Ben in the original version. It went viral and it was great.
How long
Justin
ago was this? A while ago, it was Turn Off the Dark.
I want to say like 8 years ago.
I was
going to
say around there, yeah.
So this was like the return of Spidey Project, rebranded as Peter Who, reorganized, you know, like just like, you know, like rewritten as things are. And it was like really successful at the festival. We won Best Book. I was nominated for. Me and Zoe Farmingdale, another cast member, were two of the eight nominees for Outstanding Performer in a Supporting Role, which is really awesome.
Yeah. Nymph is such a fun thing.
So
people who don't live in New York City,
it's been a part of it before.
Yeah, New York Musical Theater Festival.
Yeah.
Next to Normal is a good example of a musical
that
came from there. I don't think In the Heights went. I keep thinking I've seen Lynn do talkbacks. He's usually pretty active with it, but I don't think any of his shows came from that. But Next to Normal is usually one of their main shows that went to Broadway after working through their festival.
And actually, the Fringe Festival itself also has a lot of, like, big shows that came out of it.
Yeah, I feel like the Fringe, though, has...
Urinetown came out of the New York Fringe Festival.
Like, oh, one really? One of
my favorite musicals, yeah.
I love Urinetown. That one's also very funny.
Good. Peter Who was such a great experience. I can't believe that was over a year ago now.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. I love that so much. TJ was in that.
Oh, I know that.
There's so much overlap with all of my people.
No, I didn't know TJ until the New York Musical Improv Festival.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Which he has founded and run.
Yeah, but I never met him until then. And I just, my first impression of him was like, oh, this is such a nice, like, warm, inviting person. But I didn't know him.
He's a good dude.
Is he still involved in the musical improv scene?
He does Blank the Musical.
Oh, he okay.
Which I have an audition for.
Blank, yeah.
Another improvised musical once a week. I think they're doing it at Broadway Comedy Club.
Yes, and I keep meaning to catch up. Show. They're also on Today Ticks. If anyone ever wants to look them up, they post their tickets there. They reached out to me when I wasn't doing improv or comedy at all. I was just an actor doing musical theater, and I got a random Instagram message, I think, asking me to audition. But I had never done musical improv yet, and I didn't feel
comfortable.
I didn't feel like I would have the skills they needed, so I didn't audition. Oh, I declined it, but I don't know who ran their Instagram. I should audition.
And like, actually, I think it was like TJ.
Doug Wittick is also on it, right?
Ali Reed's in it.
Doug's been in since the beginning. Has Ali as well?
So. I'm not sure if she has been from the beginning.
This was during the New World stages. That was before that run that they reached out to me. Yeah.
TJ's in it, Ali Reed, Chris Bell is in
Chris
it.
Chris is in it?
I think so.
Chris is a great person.
Yeah, so like...
Shout out to
all
Chris.
All of our friends are in it.
Aww.
So Ali and TJ told me that they
were... I'll get the information from you after where the auditions are and stuff, but... Yeah. Oh, so let's just... Do you want to wrap it up?
I don't know.
Okay, so one question...
Like,
I mean, my first...
How I approach...
I want to... I know. I have a lot of questions I want to ask, but the first person I interviewed, it ended up being a 3-hour long interview.
Whoa.
So I've learned about myself that I don't even know if what we were talking about really was... on topic. I think we just kind of rambled. Mm-hmm. So one question I want to ask is, any advice for someone wanting to be an actor or a professional on the scene? Like, what is your advice on how to navigate that?
I think for me, my saving grace was finding a community.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been fortunate of finding like multiple communities of like creative people. Like my first community was the improv community, like the Magnet. And like I can equate like 99% of any professional stuff that I've done because of people I've met at the Magnet.
I can too. Comedy changed my life.
Story Pirates is from that. My manager's become that. And then from those things, like I've gotten other things. Like because of taking that first improv class at UCB, I found the Magnet a year later. I met Story Pirates, or mm-hmm. wanted to know why these people are wearing these t-shirts. And then I met all those people in Story Pirates after being cast. And then like a lot of people are content creators and making cool shit that I want to be a part of. And then that's kind of like how it worked for me. So like finding a community of like-minded creative people is like paramount. Like you can't create in a vacuum. You need people. Like yes, you can show run your own thing, but like you need people around you to help support.
And if someone is just moving to the city, they don't know anything, they're just wanting to become an actor,
take a class.
For
me, I wanted to do improv.
Mm-hmm. But it's not even specific to genre.
Yeah, no,
it's just
like
to meet people.
It's just like anything else. It's like you're doing reps. You're exercising. So if you want to be like a Shakespearean actor, find like groups of people who do that and practice it. I have a lot of friends who have like acting groups where like actors just support each other. Like you need people around you.
Yeah.
So find those people.
Yeah.
Don't wait for them to come to you.
I love that. And have you found that your voice and what you enjoy has changed over the years?
I think it became more specific.
Okay. So what is the specificity
of what it
is?
By looking at Puffs and looking at Peter Who and looking at Story Pirates and even like musical improv, like I most of the shit I do is like shades of the same color, you know, like slightly cartoony, little absurd high stakes on like kind of like low stakes situations, you know, like what's that quote about comedy, like comedy versus drama, like comedy is like high stakes on like unimportant things, and I don't know,
but I want to know the quote.
It's something like that. I'm not going
to
look it up.
It's similar to the pirate ninja robot thing where I probably heard it.
It's a really good quote. I don't know what it is, but it's a really good quote. But yeah, I think my voice is getting a little more specific. That's not to say that I don't think I'd be capable of doing more serious things. Like I've done plays for friends that were like I thought were out of my wheelhouse, but like it was just a different color of what I like to do. Like I did a one act that a friend wrote. And I was just another version of a douchebag, but it was a more grounded real douchebag.
Have you played a lot of douchebags?
A lot of douchebags.
That's so funny. I feel like, you know what though, side note, I feel like when I first met you, I was like, oh, he's so nice, but I wasn't sure on first impression of you until like 2 minutes into the conversation. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
I'm also like...
It's not even that. I think you're like a... You're a straight, good-looking dude and comedy and an actor, but sometimes they're not always the nicest people. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah.
There's a lot of assholes out there.
Some of the douchiest characters are played by the nicest people. You've got range.
A nice guy douche.
I know. Are you going to get to perform this week on Puffs?
Probably not.
Okay.
I think, like, all of the... principles want
to like no I'm trying the end. I haven't been asking people this, but I should. Do you have any social media or something you want us to follow?
Yeah,
or
on Instagram I am Chris Simpson.
I'm so bad with my Instagram, but perfect.
Instagram is the best.
Great. Yeah. All right, well, anything else?
Let's get another drink.
Yeah, let's do this. Perfect.
Hey, I think of you as someone I would like to be. Like to be. Tell me, how do I find my part in this? I've already put all of my heart in this art. The art of not making it.
Love this episode of The Art of Not Making It? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's always appreciated, I promise. I read every single review, and they mean so much to me. Thanks again, and see you next Thursday.